Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 20th, 2015. The IGAD chairman appoints former Botswana president to head the Joint and Monitoring Evaluation Commission. And South Sudan's Minister of Justice is convincing lawmakers to accept constitutional amendments aimed at giving President Kiir powers to appoint governors and lawmakers for 28 states.
Since the President of the Republic has responded to the popular demand for further decentralization by creating more states, it is therefore necessary that certain articles of the Transitional Constitution 2011 are to be amended to meet this new extension of decentralized system of governance.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The head of East African Bloc, IGAD, Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn, has appointed the former president of Botswana, Festus Gwatonye Mohe, to head the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JEMEC, for South Sudan. JEMEC is a key part of the IGAD Plus brokered peace deal for South Sudan that President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar signed in August. JEMEC will be based in Juba to monitor the creation of the transitional government. It will also oversee security arrangements during an interim period for South Sudan and preparations for elections that are due to be held in 2018. The host of VOA's Straight Talk Africa, Shaka Sale, is here in the studio with me to tell us why Mohe is a good choice for the job. Shaka, thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Yeah, my first question to you is, who is Festus Mohe and what does he bring to this very important position?
Festus Mohe is an incredible human being. He is a man that I had the opportunity to interact with several times, and I once hosted him live right here at the Voice of America on Straight Talk Africa back in 2007. He is a man who exudes an incredible sense of justice. And I'm talking about social justice or socio-economic justice, frankly, for all.
Yes.
And I say that because when I first interviewed him, I recall asking him a very simple question. I said, what was your mode of transportation from Africa to Washington, D.C.? And, you know, he told me that I came on Emirates. And I said, you came on a commercial aircraft. For an African president who comes from one of the richest countries, a country, John, that had reserves of more than $6 billion.
Yes.
And you come commercial just like an ordinary citizen, and yet a lot of your colleagues on the continent whose countries are very poor, go around the world, frankly, begging for money, they fly in presidential jet planes. I said, why do you do that? He said, Shaka, if I did that, given some of the problems in my country, my people would not be very kind to me.
Yeah, and given the difficulties that others have had trying to restore peace in South Sudan, what should Mohe do differently?
Well, I don't know, frankly, that he has much to do other than to be in a position where he obviously expects to bring order, especially among the key players that are going to be part of the transitional government in South Sudan. But this is a man that has a sense of fairness, a man that is remarkably impartial, a man that comes, by the way, with incredible good governance and democratic credentials. This is a man who happens to be a recipient, for example, of the 2008 Mo Ibrahim Prize, which is an achievement in African leadership for good governance.
Yes,
and the same year, by the way, he was also awarded by then French President Nicolas Sarkozy with what is called the Grand Cross for, in the words of Sarkozy, for his exemplary leadership in making Botswana a model of democracy and good governance.
Yeah, and you have spoken in the past with him when he was observing elections in Nigeria 4 years ago and in Kenya in 2013, and he has been a guest on Straight Talk Africa. What struck you most about him?
Well, again, I go back to his stature, his impeccable credentials. He's a man that studied economics at Oxford University, a man, of course, that served two terms as president of Botswana, and in fact left office 9 months before the end of his term. He is, by the way, the third president of Botswana. That is succeeding, of course, Sake Tumile Masire, who himself had, of course, succeeded, Seretse Khama, who had died. And, of course, Mohaye handed over power to Seretse Khama's son, Lieutenant General retired Ian Khama. He is a man that is internationally, regionally, and even in his own country, widely respected.
Well, Shaka Sali, thank you very much. We will leave it at that. Thank you for your insights into First Mohai's life. Mohai is the former president of Botswana who has been appointed as the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JEMAC, for South Sudan. South Sudan's Justice Minister today introduced a bill in Parliament that would amend three articles in the country's constitution. One of the amendments would change the number of states from 10 to 28, and others would allow President Salva Kiir to appoint state governors and lawmakers. Philip Thornalil reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila today introduced the amendment bill to the National Legislature, which is the joint session of lower and upper houses of Parliament in Juba. Wanawila says he has approved an amendment that will incorporate the 28 states as created by presidential order earlier this month.
Since the President of the Republic has responded to the popular demand for further decentralization by creating more states, bringing the number of the states in the Republic of South Sudan to 28 states, it is therefore necessary that certain articles of the Transitional Constitution 2011 are to be amended to meet this new extension of decentralized system of governance.
Under that new system, Wanawila says, the Article 162, which states that the territory of South Sudan is composed of 10 states governed on the basis of decentralization, will be amended to say 28 states. Also, Article 164, which states that the members of state assemblies shall be comprised of the current elected members, will be amended to say that the president will appoint some MPs because of the new states that have been created. A third article to be amended is Article 165, which states that a governor for each state shall be elected by the residents of that state. Wanawila says President Kiir will now appoint all state governors under the order he instituted 3 weeks ago. Onyuti Adigo, the minority leader in Parliament, tried to halt the tabling of the amendment bill, saying there is a case pending before the Supreme Court on the president's order.
It is a practice in this house that anything in the court is not supposed to be deliberated by this house until the court takes a decision.
Adiko says this latest move contradicts the constitution and the agreement signed by the president on August 26 and rectified by South Sudanese lawmakers last month. Information Minister Michael Makwe disagrees. Makwe, who also represents Jonglei State's Bor County in Parliament, says the opposition leader has not done his homework.
It is unfortunate that the leader of minority doesn't know what he's talking about. Go back to your constitution, check it very well. It will inform you as to how you institute proceedings against the government.
Makwe says Adigo is violating assembly's procedure by raising objection to tabling the bill. He says such debates are only permitted during parliamentary deliberations. After tabling the bill, Speaker Manasseh Magog Rundial sent the amendment bill to the Committee of Legislation for study. After 30 days, it is expected to come back to the full parliament for debate. The ruling SPLM party has a clear majority in the parliament, and the amendment is expected to pass easily. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
Police in Juba have apprehended 23 people who are suspected of being involved in a spate of burglaries that have put residents of the capital on the edge. Now the security authorities are asking people in Juba to help convict the suspects. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The suspects were arrested in a series of police raids, including in heavily trafficked market areas, police spokesman James Mande says. They had five automatic weapons, including an AK-47 and a handgun in their possession when they were detained. Police also seized 14 motorbikes that the suspected criminals allegedly used to carry out their crimes. Mande says the suspects are accused of being behind a series of burglaries in Juba that have targeted privately owned shops and offices and government buildings. Mande says the modus operandi of the criminals or the way they operate is always the same.
They carry the guns, the portable bags. They fold them with the handkerchief, with the piece of clothes, and carry them about among the people. The moment they spot their target, they automatically get out the guns and then they use it to rob the shops, and then immediately they get on the badaboda and run away.
Mande says one of the alleged criminals told the police that the guns they used to carry out the robberies were hired. Sometimes Mande reports the suspect as saying soldiers rented their weapons to the suspects who paid the equivalent of $75 to use the guns. Last week, a suspected burglar was shot dead and two were wounded by security officials as they tried to break into the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs at night, Mande says. In another incident, police thwarted an attempt to break into the offices of the Ministry of Health and Ministry of Agriculture. Mande says some of the suspects were caught red-handed in Melekia Market while they were attempting to rob a jewelry shop on Sunday. Mande says ordinary citizens need to help the authorities to convict the alleged criminals by speaking out as witnesses.
The court will not convict them unless there is substantially evidence. So when a criminal is arrested, I request the public, all those who saw the person committing crime, to go and give evidence so that it can enable the prosecution attorney to take the case to the court so that the court will be able to convict the person based on the evidence. When the evidence are not there always, what happens is the case is cancelled and the criminals are released and they blame the police, that the police are receiving bribery. It is not.
Mande did not say when the suspects will appear in court. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Residents of Western Bahr el-Ghazal state capital of Wau are demanding that state officials set up security following attacks that left scores dead and property destroyed. State officials blame suspected rebels for the violence and urge residents to immediately report any suspicious-looking people to police. 38-year-old Joseph Badri was killed last night while on duty as a guard at Wau's Bright Future Primary School, where he worked for the past 4 years. 27-year-old Mohammed Hussein Mossad, a Sudanese trader from Darfur who runs a shop in Bagari Jadid residential area, says 2 nights ago a gunman threatened him and 3 of his brothers when demanding money. Mossad says he handed over 1,000 South Sudanese pounds, the entire amount he had made from sales that day. He says they came and ordered him at gunpoint in his shop, asking for money. He says he just gave what he had in the drawer and he did not know how much that money was, but it could be around 1,000 South Sudanese pounds, and then the thieves left. After 2 minutes, he had gunshots at a school. Speaking in Arabic, Mossad says the gunman was alone. His face was covered. He says the man pointed a gun at his face and demanded money. He says he gave him money, about 1,000, and then left. He said they had gunshots a few minutes later by the school. Elia Camille Dumo, a newly appointed Wau municipal mayor, accuses rebels loyal to armed opposition leader Riek Machar of hiding in the bush near Wau and causing the wave of violence in the area. Speaking in Arabic, Dimo says the group comes to town to use the phone networks and some came to town and stay with their families and then go back to the bush. He says the security arrangement involving redeployment of forces in town, but they are also asking citizens to identify anyone that looks suspicious to security forces. Western Bahr al-Ghazal officials have repeatedly accused a rebel group in Wau of carrying out violent acts, including killing civilians and looting food trucks along the Bazia Wau Road. 65-year-old Charles Abdallah Okelu, who works as a watchman at the Palika Center of the Catholic Church in Wau, says he fears his life is in danger. He wants the government to boost security for citizens so they feel safe walking outside. Speaking in Arabic, Okel says the security situation in town is not good at all. He says even at 7 p.m., he's afraid to move around or sleep with his family. In July, numerous cases of killings, night robberies, and looting were reported in Wau. Michael Atit prepared this report from Wau. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What happened to the survivors of the Maridi fuel tanker explosion? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
would you break the law to save a loved one?
I would do that. I would do it. Because if it has to do with life, then I must break the law to save the life. But if I have to go to jail after that and answer questions from the police, there is no problem, provided the life has been saved.
Breaking the law to save someone is impossible. It's impossible. I can't break the law despite the danger of what the person goes through.
Of course, we are the ones making the law. I can break the law to save my loved one.
There is this will, there's this love that God has placed within man that is ready to sacrifice. And so, unwillingly, we are geared to sacrifice for another person we love.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about Ebola. The World Health Organization chief says preparedness, awareness, and transparency are at the heart of the World Health Organization reform process. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
World Health Organization Director General Margaret Chan says many lessons have been learned from the Ebola epidemic in West Africa, and these will be incorporated in the reform process that is underway. She says being prepared is decisive in fighting any epidemic or pandemic of such magnitude. She tells VOA that involves shoring up and strengthening the resilience of fragile health systems in Africa and elsewhere in the world.
In the past, when we talk about health system, the tendency is to talk about clinical care, curative care, and now we should integrate the public health disease surveillance and laboratory testing as part of the health system capability.
As part of the reform program, Dr. Chan says WHO is building a global emergency health workforce. She says trained foreign medical teams will be on standby, ready to respond rapidly to a disease outbreak or natural disaster in any country. She says decisive leadership, awareness of the dangers posed by an epidemic, and being transparent about these problems are critical in controlling an outbreak. One of the big lessons learned from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, she says, is the importance of building trust between the communities and health workers. She says community engagement is a big part of the ongoing work, even as the epidemic is winding down.
As we are speaking, we are still seeing community resistance. They hide cases. They continue to do secret burial. And if that is happening, it will undermine the effective public health measures.
She says Liberia has been declared Ebola-free. Sierra Leone has not had a case of Ebola in 4 weeks and is moving closer to the 42 days needed for it, too, to be declared free of the disease. But Dr. Chan warns Ebola is not yet finished. She says the World Health Organization is in the process of confirming 3 new suspected cases of Ebola in Guinea. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We go back to South Sudan. A month ago, more than 200 people were killed when a fuel tanker truck overturned in Maridi County and exploded in a ball of fire. Many of the victims were killed while trying to collect the fuel from the tanker. Last weekend, Western Equatorial officials visited the area where they say the situation is dire. VOA fellow Tito Justin has more.
Western Equatorial State Minister of Transport, Roads and Bridges Rajab Simon says he went to pay his condolences to an orphan whose parents died in the fire, but the boy died before he could meet him because he did not have enough to eat. Simon says he met a man who lost 10 members of his family in the fire, including his wife. He says the man goes every day to Mambe Payam, the scene of the accident, and simply sits the whole day thinking about his family. Simon says community members sometimes go to search for the bones of the victims and bury them. He says community members are still mourning and need help.
Like those who lost several, almost all their family members and they're left alone, they also need, beyond physical support, they need things like psychosocial treatment. Otherwise, like this guy who goes there every morning, sits at the scene and goes back in the evening and does nothing else except going to sit there. If they are not helped, I think they may get into difficult situations in the future.
Dozens of other victims of the accident are still recovering from their injuries at Juba Teaching Hospital. The director of emergency at the hospital, Abraham Adut, says they have discharged about 20 patients from the accident. 12 of them were airlifted to Maridi yesterday. Adut says some are expected to be discharged in the next few weeks.
The rest are actually almost also going to be discharged in the next few 2 to 3 weeks. We shall also discharge quite a number of them as well. You know, we've actually catered for them, and all of them are in terrible condition right now as you speak.
It's not clear how those who have been discharged will survive since many lost several members of their families. Simon says the church and the communities across the state are mobilizing support to help orphans, widows, and other survivors.
The situation is actually not good for the orphans and the widows who are left there. And the church in Maridi is trying to help, but of course the help is not much. So those people definitely need help, especially the young ones, but also the widows.
Last month, County Sub-Chief Mariam Tito said the leaking truck exploded in a fireball when soldiers fired their weapons to try to disperse the crowd so they could keep the fuel for themselves. Simon says bad roads in the state also contributed to the accident. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
We move to Wau. Some residents of Western Bahr al-Ghazala are complaining about a recent increase in airplane tickets. Only one commercial airline serves the state capital, Wau, and it recently increased the cost of tickets. The airline's director says he was forced to raise the prices by the unfavorable pound to dollar exchange rate and by skyrocketing fuel prices. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
Golden Wings Airline last week increased the price of a business class ticket from Wau to Juba from 1,200 South Sudanese pounds to 2,000 pounds. The airline also hiked the price for ordinary citizens from 750 South Sudanese pounds to 1,750 pounds. To most Western Bahr al-Ghazal residents, the price hikes make no difference. Most people in the state travel by road. But a recent spike in attacks on the state's road users has led to more people choosing to travel by air. But to employees of non-governmental organizations, businessmen, and Bahr al-Ghazal University students, the airfare hikes will hit hard. Jongo John is a medical student at Bahr al-Ghazal University in Wau. He was at the Golden Wings office today trying to buy a ticket to Juba. He was staggered when he saw the new price of a ticket.
The ticket of flight has actually risen, double itself, from 700 to and 700. And you can see that is actually beyond the normal range. And people are, include me, I'm not happy with that. But there is no way for us to travel to Juba except by using aircraft. The road is accessible. We wouldn't actually use airport to, as a means of transportation to Juba.
Monica Louis sells women's shoes and clothing. She says she wants to travel to Juba to buy new stock ahead of the Christmas season. But she says the increased airfare will affect profits. She says the higher ticket prices are a blow to her business. Mario Luis Abusuf is the acting director of Golden Wings in WOW. He says both a shortage of U.S. dollars, which his airline needs to pay its foreign employees, and a recent increase in fuel price have forced the airline to increase fares. But he admits that the increase in airfares is having a negative impact on business. Abusuf says passengers' numbers have declined. He says many passengers complain about the new ticket prices, but Abusuf tells them it is beyond the airline's control. Abusuf says the airfares will remain high as long as U.S. dollars are in short supply and fuel prices remain high. Golden Wings has been the only commercial airlines that flies to WOW since Kush Air and Alok Air stopped operations. Both of those airlines cited difficulties getting U.S. dollars to finance their operations and buy spare parts as their reason. But there is a silver lining to this story. Yesterday, another commercial airline launched flights to WOW. Deng George Achwil is the director of Atlas Airlines in WOW. He says Atlas has been considering which destination in South Sudan it could fly to and ended up selecting WOW, Rumbek, Awil, Kwajok and parts of Upper Nile State and the Greater Equatorial Region. George says Atlas wants to serve communities by providing them an alternative to traveling on unsafe roads. With Golden Wings facing competition, maybe prices will start to come down again. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WOW.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The head of regional bloc IGAD, the Ethiopian prime minister, has appointed the former president of Botswana, Festus Mohai, to head the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, for South Sudan. JMEC has been a core part of the IGAD Plus brokered peace deal for South Sudan, signed by President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar in August. JMEC, based in Juba, will monitor the new transitional government. It will also oversee security arrangements during an interim period for South Sudan and preparations for elections to be held in 2018. South Sudan's justice minister today introduced a bill in parliament to amend three articles in the transitional constitution. One would change the number of states from 10 to 28. The others would allow President Kiir to appoint state governors and lawmakers. And finally, Juba police arrested 23 people suspected of being involved in a wave of burglaries in the capital. Security officials are asking people to step forward and help convict the suspects who were arrested in a series of police raids, including in some busy market areas. A police spokesman says six automatic weapons were in their possession when the suspects were detained. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Take My Love, It's Free by South African superstar Yvonne Chaka Chaka. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thank you for being with us. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.